snow here stays pretty green. I'm gonna make a lot of money, then I'm gonna quit this crazy scene. I wish I had.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Portland Veg Fest, Saturday, September 27th and Sunday, September 28th from 10 to 6 p.m. at the Oregon Convention Center in Portland. Portland Veg Fest, Oregon's largest vegan food and lifestyle event, offers resources, entertainment, and community building to celebrate sustainable, healthy, and compassionate food choices. Speakers this year include author Dr. Joel Furman, pastry chef Fran, and the author of the Paleo Vegan Cookbook, Ellen Jaffe Jones. Again, that's the Portland Veg Fest, Saturday, September 27th and Sunday, September 28th at the Oregon Convention Center, 777 Northeast MLK Jr. Boulevard in Portland. More can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub, independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizza, salads, and wraps, located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland, 503-232-5511 or laurelhursttheater.com.
Hello and welcome to the film show on KBOO. I'm SW Conser, and I'm going to be joined soon by Jen Chavez. Jen has a couple of really fascinating guests to talk to you this morning. Kevin Moyer and Mark Smolowitz are the producers of a new documentary that's going to be playing at the Real Music Festival. It's called Heaven Adores You, and it covers the life and career of Elliott Smith. But first, I'm really pleased to be welcoming back our good friend, Dennis Nybeck. Dennis, along with Ann Richardson, is one of the foremost people on the Oregon Movies A to Z group here in Portland. And they are doing a series of portraits of great filmmakers who've come out of Oregon. It's called Oregon Geniuses, and they are going to be profiling on October 10th and 11th, they're going to be profiling James Blue and James Ivory. Dennis Nybeck, welcome back to the show.
It's nice to be here. Thank you.
So I think people might know the name James Ivory if you put him in context. Let's start with James Ivory.
Well, Merchant Ivory Productions. It's funny. I was once in a video store, and I asked for James Ivory, and they said, oh, that's in the British films. James Ivory grew up in Klamath Falls. He attended the University of Oregon. He came out of Oregon and had international fame. Merchant Ivory Productions, he directed 31 movies, nominated for the Oscar for A Room with a View in 1985, Howard's End 1992, and The Remains of the Day 1993. Just lots and lots of nominations and awards in his career, including BAFTA, Golden Globes, Cannes, Directors Guild, and others. That's James Ivory.
So here's a fellow who's known for making so many films about the British Empire, you know, the Brits abroad in India and other parts of the world. And he's a guy from Klamath Falls down there in rural southern Oregon.
That is right.
So the other fellow that you're profiling, not as well known, but also known for being nominated for Oscars, James Blue.
Yes, James Blue also grew up in Portland, went to the University of Oregon, and then had an international career also as a filmmaker. He was the first Oregon filmmaker to get an award at Cannes. That's his 1962 film, Olive Trees of Justice. That was filmed in Algiers in a war zone. It will be screened at the Hollywood Theater on October 11th at 1 p.m. That'll be the first screening in Portland of James Blue's Olive Trees of Justice in over 25 years.
So this is going to be, even the James Ivory films that you're showing, that you're screening at the Hollywood Theater, are not going to be the really well-known ones, the ones that you see on the DVD shelves or you see on Netflix streaming. These are going to be some really kind of obscure early work.
Well, we first met James Ivory when we had him as a guest at the Oregon Sesquicentennial Film Festival at Merrillhurst University in 2009.
Now, was that Gus Van Sant interviewing him?
Yes, Gus Van Sant interviewed James Ivory. We arranged that for Gus Van Sant to interview James Ivory on the stage at the Mission Theater. And it was in a conversation with James Ivory where he said, you know, you ought to look up James Blue. And that's where Anne, you know, first got the inspiration or found out that there was this great filmmaker, James Blue, who was really forgotten by just about everybody in Oregon. So bringing back James Ivory, we asked him, well, what would you like to show? And he said, I'd like to show my film Morris, made in 1987. So that will be at 7 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater on October 10. And he said he wanted to show Autobiography of a Princess that he made in 1975 for British television. This is something that you have to see it at the Hollywood Theater or you're not going to see it. It's
wow.
As simple as that. And that's going to be 11:30 a.m. on Saturday, October 11th.
So get out of bed early on the weekend then.
Yeah, it stars James Mason, and it's the next to the last performance of James Mason's great career.
Wow. So tell us a bit about the organization that you work with. It's Oregon Movies, A to Z, excuse me. And this is a whole series that's going on, Oregon Geniuses. You've got some other events coming up in the coming months.
It's called the Mid-Century Oregon Geniuses, yes. And we're going to look at four people: James Ivory, James Blue, Harry Smith, and Homer Groening. Homer Groening, you might know as Matt Groening's father. Well, if you know him at all. But a filmmaker, Homer Groening. In 1963, he had his first film shown at the Venice Film Festival. So Homer Groening had a career both working in advertising as a filmmaker and as a personal independent filmmaker. He made a couple of dozen short films on interesting themes. And on January 17 at the Hollywood Theater, we will have the Homer Groening Night, and Bill Plimpton will introduce that.
Wow. So you've also got, I believe you have James Ivory coming in person to town. Is that correct?
Oh, didn't I mention that?
Ah.
Yes. For the shows of Morris and Autobiography of a Princess at the Hollywood Theater, James Ivory is going to appear in person, which is a very rare thing, too. He doesn't make a lot of personal appearances. James Ivory was born in 1928.
Wow. So this is, again, this is Oregon Movies A to Z. And if people sort of Google that or go to talltalestruetales.com, they can find out a lot more about these events. And they can also go to the Hollywood Theater website. So, yeah, we do want to give a bit of a shout out to Ann Richardson, who's been doing an amazing job of arranging all these events.
Absolutely. And her blog, Oregon Movies A to Z, is just a wonderful place if you want to, you know, learn about people who made films in Oregon. Not just made films in Oregon, but people who came from Oregon to have international careers like James Ivory and James Blue.
Right. We're really looking forward to seeing folks coming from all over the place. Other filmmakers are going to show up. We're hoping that August Ventura, another documentarian, is going to make it for this screening. But tell us again the dates and the venue and how people can get tickets or find out more.
Okay, Morris, 1987, with James Ivory in person, will be at the Hollywood Theater on Friday, October 10. The next day, October 11th at 11:30 in the morning, will be James Ivory's Autobiography of a Princess. And at 1 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater on October 11th will be James Blue's Olive Trees of Justice. There's a Facebook page for Mid-Century Oregon Geniuses. You can go to Oregon Movies A to Z, and you can go to the Hollywood Theater website.
Well, Dennis Nybeck, always a pleasure to have you here on the film show. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you very much.
And now we're going to be joined by Jen Chavez, who is talking to a couple of producers about an Elliott Smith documentary that will be playing at the upcoming Real Music Festival.
Coming up next month in October, local bastion of cinephilia, the Northwest Film Center, is, for the 32nd year, hosting the annual Real Music Festival. Fall is kicking in now, the perfect time of year to listen to old records or take refuge in movie theaters on rainy days and feel those distinctly autumnal emotions. Well, Real Music combines the best of both those worlds, exploring the interplay between sound and image, and celebrating music of wide-ranging genres with music documentary and narrative films, archival performance clips, music videos, and more. The festival runs October 10th through the 22nd, and the opening night kicks off Friday, October 10th at 7 p.m. with Heaven Adores You, a new and long-in-the-works documentary about the life and music of Elliott Smith. Elliott is a bit of a Portland hometown hero, and his death in 2003 wounded a whole community of fellow musicians and fans here and across the country. Heaven Adores You is a tribute to his life and work, billed as the first Elliott Smith documentary produced by and with those who knew him well. I had the recent pleasure of speaking about the film with two producers of Heaven Adores You, Portlander and friend of Elliott's Kevin Moyer, and Mark Smolowitz, joining me by phone from San Francisco. Thanks so much for joining me, both of you, and welcome to the film show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you.
So I guess I just wanted to start by asking you both how you got involved with this project. Kevin, your history with Elliott and his music dates back years. You both went to high school together at Lincoln High School, is that right?
Yeah, we went to the same high school. He was older than me. But we crossed paths, just, you know, hanging out in front of the high school waiting for the bus. And, you know, years later, I would release some of his music on other projects. But we share friends and interests, and, you know, Portland's not that big, so everybody kind of knows everybody.
As someone who, you know, knew him, a friend of his, what interested you in participating in this project? What stood out to you about it?
Well, you know, it was being done at a very high level, and I think it's a long time coming that a project's been done that kind of treats Elliott the right way and goes after the right things. There's a lot of exploitive and sensational kind of aspects to his story. And I really just wanted, you know, I would see those things happen and wish that somebody would do something that was really about him as a person and, more importantly, his music, and kind of put the focus there. So I kind of just was hoping somebody would do it and had no idea that it would eventually be us to do it.
Right, and you played an active role in getting some of his friends and some of the people who were close to him involved, is that right?
Yeah. You know, when I came onto the project, that was kind of where things changed a little bit to be about Elliott specifically. And, you know, we wanted to do a project coming from within his circle of friends and by his circle of friends. You know, Portland's kind of closed down. We don't really talk about Elliott, and that's good for our own self-preservation, but it's also bad for his legacy because then everybody else who didn't know him talks about him. And you're kind of left with, well, you know, we complain about how the media portrays him, but we're not really doing anything to help if we're not saying anything. So this was kind of the chance to hopefully do that.
And what about you, Mark? I understand you became involved with it after the film was already being made. You have a background in social issue filmmaking, as I understand mm-hmm. it. What stood out to you about this project and made you want to participate?
Well, I actually have a longstanding friendship with Nicholas Rossi, the director. So I had been kind of in the loop on Nicholas's idea to make a film about Elliott Smith for quite a few years. In the background, you know, I had just kind of been informally consulting and sort of being a friend to the idea. Certainly at the time of the Kickstarter that sort of launched the project, I was there helping him navigate crowdfunding and helping him sort of think about how to engage the fans in that process. And then over the course of the making of the film, I had sort of my one-on-one phone calls with him where we would sort of talk through how to think about undertaking interviews and capturing a story and how to think about Elliot's life and his relationship to these important cities that Nicholas was trying to capture in the film, you know, Portland, New York, and Los Angeles, and of course his time in Texas as a child. And then there was a certain moment in the making of the film where it became apparent that an additional producer was going to be needed to help get it finished. And I think really for me, the moment that it all came to fruition was in the summer of last year. Nicholas showed me the rough cut that he was working on kind of quietly in his apartment in Brooklyn, New York. And I sat in my apartment in San Francisco and I watched it on my laptop and I just found it to be stunning. And I found it to be the kind of music documentary that would really resonate with broad audiences. I really loved the cinematography, the way that all of the people who appear in the film as interviews sort of chart Elliot's life story for us. And it felt both raw and honest and really seemed to me, as someone who wasn't very familiar with Elliot's backstory, and I learned so much about this very important artist, and I felt like, wow, we're really looking at potentially a film that could put this artists on the map in a whole new way, expose him to new audiences, maybe even kind of elevate him to the canon of very important American musicians and singer-songwriters. We actually world premiered in April at the San Francisco International Film Festival, which was a tremendously successful launch for the film. And since that time, we've managed to get it placed in great festivals. Kind of as of this conversation, we're having our world premiere at Athens, at the Athens International Film Festival in Greece.
Yeah, and that's why Nicholas isn't joining us right
exactly
now. He's currently at a glamorous Grecian film premiere.
Yes, he is.
You know, a lot of the hype around this film, of course, has been around the music. It's notable that this is the first documentary that's actually contained his music. But, you know, more about Elliot Smith as the subject of this film, his life. I imagine as a filmmaker, when making a documentary about a subject posthumously, it's a challenge to make sure it's an authentic representation of that subject's voice. This film culls from footage of over 30 interviews he did, and in doing so kind of allows him to narrate his own experience. The film opens, for example, with this great footage of an interview following Elliot's Oscars performance, about which he says, "I wouldn't say that was punk at all, but it was pretty funny." He's been made into this tragic figure in the public eye, but in that interview he comes across as this shy, sweet goofball. Do you feel like using interviews in this way gives the film more of an autobiographical feel and lets his actual personality shine through?
I think so. I mean, you know, if you have the opportunity to let him speak for himself, you want to do that, whether it's through, you know, his own interviews that he did or his own music. But the other side of that, the problem is that he comes across so shy and reserved in those interviews, and he did media, so he didn't do it very often. And when he did, he comes across that way. So it really kind of falls on his friends to talk about the other side, that because, you know, there's a reason that the media kind of portrays him as the sad sack person, which wasn't the case at all. He was extremely funny. But you get these interviews where he's on camera and shy and introverted, and then you pair that with the music that sometimes can be that way as well. And it's easy to make that assumption that this guy is only this way all the time. And that wasn't the case at all. So yeah, I mean, we had a lot of interview footage to go through. KBOO, you guys did we used, I think it was Pandora's Box from 1995, interview.
Oh,
that
really?
You, yeah, that you guys cool. did with Heat Miser. And so we used that pretty extensively. To show those guys kind of laughing and having a good time in the studio. So, but yeah, you want him to speak for himself wherever possible.
Yeah, kind of what you talk about his rapport with journalists. One of the interviewees in the film talks about all these short-sighted journalists asking him kind of stupid questions, mm-hmm. like, "Do you just play coffee shops? And did Gus Van Sant discover you?" And stuff like that. And then, you know, later, of course, unfortunately, his death was reported upon in this very salacious way, to the point that, as I understand, those close to him became wary of interacting with the media at all. Do you feel like this film functions as a response to that, as an alternative to that?
for me personally, that was the motivation for doing it. You know, wanting to just make the point that the last couple of days or last minutes or whatever of his life is not the sum of his entire life.
I had a lot of conversations with Nicholas about his intentions along the way, and I think he really, you know, wanted to make a film about the journey of an artist, and that was his kind of first and foremost inclination, and I found that that was a really pure intention, and even as the way that he sort of approached the interviews was with the idea that he wanted to honor the fact that people had lost their close friend, and that even though almost 10 years had gone by since he passed, that it would be difficult to talk about what had happened. And so he went at this, I think, in the most kind of respectful way that he possibly could, around sort of building their trust and really considering the fact that at the time of his passing that it was tragic and it was handled, you know, very badly by many in the media, and that we sort of wanted to be the project that would be absolutely the opposite of that.
You know, Kevin, as someone who knew him, I wonder, what's your favorite part of the film in terms of something you feel really authentically represents him as you remember?
You know, there's this part in the film. We were recording this really sweet guy named Polly. He was a drummer and he toured with Elliot and recorded with Elliot. And he was just having a lot of, as were everybody we talked to, having a lot of problems kind of being on camera and having these really hard conversations about a friend who's no longer around. And every time we would ask a question, he would stop and we would turn off the cameras and join him on the porch for a smoke and kind of like try to get him through it. And we ended up actually not having him do any questions because it just was too hard for him. But there were two moments that we still used in the film where we kind of caught him on camera having a conversation. And we were just kind of talking about mutual friends and kind of lulled him into this comfort with the camera still rolling. For me, that's one of my favorite parts of the film because it's so real. Polly talks about being on stage with Elliot and Elliot looking over at him and smiling. And he's just got this image of him smiling in his memory, and sometimes he says that he dreams about that smile. That was my favorite part, just the way it happened, what it meant, and it was just such a nice, sincere sentiment. And I think it's, you know, the fact that Elliot was smiling is something that most people don't see when they watch the media and listen to his music, and I think it's just, that was my favorite.
What about you, Mark? Do you have a favorite part?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, you know, what I love about the film in general is the way that Nicholas kind of constructs the viewer's relationship to these different cities. You really get a sense of that Elliot had a strong personal connection to Portland, to New York, and Los Angeles, and how those different moments in his life are really informed by the people and the place that he lived and worked. And I think that in cinema, with the cinematography that Nicholas and Jeremiah kind of pulled together, you know, you can really sort of get that sense of place for someone and what that place meant to them. And then with the help of the interviews, it really kind of fleshes that out for a viewer. And I really connected with that.
Adding to that point, I think that's such a good point. And I'm not sure if it was something that Nicholas did intentionally or subconsciously, but just the idea of the journey that Mark's talking about, that Elliot went on. When we were filming it, I was joking that we should call the film Planes, Trains, and Automobiles because there's so many. I think Nicholas just loves trains also, but there's a lot of trains and there's a lot of planes and there's shots from cars and of cars and overpasses and bikes. And it's just transportation. And I think that lends to what Mark is saying about an artist's journey and these different locations and the different cities that really influenced Elliot as an artist, and kind of the journey that he went on from one place to another and the music that went with it.
Yeah, talking about this sense of place that comes through in the film and, you know, also in the music, you know, so many people I've met who grew up here or who've been in Portland for a long time have this kind of hometown hero pride for Elliot, and his music is to them an intrinsic part of experiencing Portland and what Portland was like when he was here. What are you hoping that Portland viewers in particular can take away from this film?
I hope that the Portland viewers find it accurate. And, you know, the media has called this project a love letter to Elliot and Portland, and I think that's a huge compliment. You know, certainly we set out to make a love letter to Elliot, but the fact that it's been so well received and the way it reflects Portland specifically is a nice thing as well. People in Portland are so, they're either really familiar with Elliot and very protective of him, like you said, kind of this brother. And hopefully we do right by them and we kind of showcase basically why we love him and as a person and an artist. I think that's something that's important as a community, that, you know, we look at this guy who kind of started here and left here and then left. And hopefully we've added to his legacy in a positive way.
Well, I know that I look forward to very much and hopefully our listeners as well catching the screenings that are happening here in Portland. Again, the opening night of the Real Music Film Festival at the Northwest Film Center is going to feature a screening of Heaven Adores You, and then it will screen again Sunday, October 12th. The opening night is Friday the 10th. I just want to thank you both very much for your time. I've been speaking with Kevin Moyers and Mark Smolowitz, the producers of the music documentary Heaven Adores You. More info about that film at heavenadoresyou.com. Kevin and Mark, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much, Jen.
Yes, thanks, Jen. You're listening to The Film Show here on KBOO. I'm SW Conser, and that was Jen Chavez talking with the folks behind the new documentary about Elliot Smith, Heaven Adores You. And thanks for tuning in today on The Film Show. Before we go, we're going to tell you a little bit about the film events that are happening in the area. Tonight, the Portland Eco Film Festival continues with the screening of Tiny, A Story About Living Small. The new documentary about tiny homes as an environmentalist movement screens at 7:30 at the Hollywood Theater. Details at hollywoodtheater.org. On Saturday, September 27th, Cinema 21 will host the 16th annual animation show of shows, the block of 11 new animated shorts from around the world, curated by Ron Diamond, kicks off at 11 a.m., and I believe it's free. More information is available at cinema21.com. On Monday, September 29th, Cinema Project will present a Maya Deren double feature at the Hollywood Theater. The tribute to the renowned avant-garde filmmaker begins at 7 with a shorts block and continues at 9 p.m. with Divine Horsemen, The Living Gods of Haiti. Learn more at cinemaproject.org. From October 3rd through 9th at Cinema 21, the Portland Queer Festival returns for its 18th year. Formerly the Portland Lesbian and Gay Film Festival, the fest showcases features, documentaries, and shorts made by, about, or of interest to the LGBTQ community. A full schedule is available now at pdxqueerfilm.com. On October 4th at the Hollywood Theater, the best of the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival kicks off at 7 p.m., screening short film highlights from the past 19 years of the festival. More info at hplfilmfestival.org. And from October 8th through 11th, the Hollywood Theater will participate in Design Week Portland with three screenings of films about art and design. The programming block will include multiple visiting artists, such as urban artist Aaron Rose. Details on Design Week, film, and the festival in general at designweekportland.com. On October 9th, our own KBOO at the Clinton series continues with The U.S. versus John Lennon. The documentary focuses on Lennon's anti-war activism and Nixon's attempts to silence him. Show starts at 7 p.m. Details are available at cstpdx.com. And from October 11th through the 22nd, the Northwest Film Center presents its 32nd annual Real Music Festival, a cross-genre celebration of music, musicians, and sound in film, presenting documentaries, performance footage, and more. Opening night film is Heaven Adores You. If you missed Jen's conversation about that film earlier this hour, check out our podcast at kboo.fm. More information about dozens more films screening at the festival can be found at nwfilm.org. On October 11th and 12th, the Clinton Street Theater will once again host Zompire, the Undead Film Festival. The festival, brought to you by the head of the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival, is dedicated to all things undead. Screenings at 6 p.m. both days and 1 p.m. on Saturday. So on Sunday, excuse me. More info at cstpdx.com. From October 23rd through early November, the Northwest Film Center will present Voices in Action, Human Rights on Film. The U.S. and international films featured explore filmmaking as a tool for social action, touching upon wide-ranging, thought-provoking issues. Details are available at nwfilm.org. And on Monday, October 27th and Tuesday the 28th, Cinema Project joins with the Northwest Film Center to present Unfixed Terra Firma, analog films from artist-run labs. The two-night program features European work from film labs in France, Germany, and Belgium, with screenings at 7 p.m. each night. To learn more, visit cinemaproject.org. Well, that's the film show for this month. Thank you so much for joining us. We'd like to thank Dennis Nyback for telling us about Oregon Movies A to Z, Kevin Moore and Mark Smolowitz for telling us about Heaven Adores You, the Elliott Smith documentary. Thanks also to the Oregon Media Production Association for their support and collaboration, and thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. The audio for this show will be available later today on our archive page, kboo.fm/thefilmshow. And be sure to follow us on Twitter, KBOO Film Show. Now stay tuned for an afternoon of music on your homegrown Portland radio station.
Now for the KBOO News at Noon for Thursday, September 25th, 2014. According to a survey released yesterday, employees at the Bonneville Power Administration suffer from low morale. In the survey, by Gallup, BPA employees gave the organization low scores in accountability, inclusiveness, and safety. These findings come a year after the Department of Energy found that the BPA engaged in discriminatory hiring practices and provided insufficient human resources. BPA is a federal agency that sells power. Gallup based its findings on the testimony of more than 2,000 employees. New healthcare regulations are helping reduce the amount of money owed to hospitals. A new report from the Department of Health and Human Services found that, since the expansion of insurance and Medicaid, hospitals have saved almost $6 billion in unpaid medical bills. The report, which came out